Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from People Mover. Help update the public transit service plan. Visit transitonthemove.com to take the latest public survey by April 26th.
It's not just Anchorage. It happens all over Alaska. It happens down south as well.
Some Fairbanks residents call for more transparency after two state troopers are cleared in a fatal shooting. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, April 15th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, two Anchorage shelters welcome animals as part of an effort to eliminate barriers to housing.
When your life maybe has kind of fallen apart, having an animal is one of the things that can help bring you back.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly. President Trump has appointed Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy to a seat on the U.S. Arctic Research Commission. The commission promotes Arctic science and helps steer research funding to priority projects in Alaska and the international Arctic. This is the first time a sitting governor has served on the commission, and the appointment takes effect immediately. Dunleavy's spokesman did not answer questions about how much time or travel he expected the position to take. Meade Treadwell is a former chair of the commission who served before he was elected lieutenant governor of Alaska. Treadwell says the position is important, especially since the U.S. gained a lot of Arctic territory in recent years with a claim to the extended outer continental shelf.
We just got 2 California's worth of land north of Alaska, and we've got to do you get that much land, you kind of need a Lewis and Clark program to figure out what we got.
Treadwell says it will also allow Dunleavy to press the Interior Department to advance energy and critical minerals projects in the Arctic. He says the commission can help resolve questions about why so many Alaska fish populations are crashing. The governor issued a statement saying it was an honor and listed priorities he intends to pursue only in general terms, including fortifying America's leadership in the Arctic. Dunleavy's term as a governor ends in early December. The position is not salaried but pays travel and per diem expenses. The Trump administration has reoriented Arctic policy, shifting money away from climate research and the National Science Foundation while emphasizing national security, icebreakers, and resource development. Protesters gathered in Fairbanks on Saturday to demand answers and accountability from Alaska State Troopers. That's after troopers fatally shot a man experiencing a mental health crisis and also shot and critically wounded his brother. As Shelby Herbert reports for the Alaska Desk, those officers won't face charges, but community members are asking state lawmakers to make it easier for the families of police shooting victims to access body camera footage.
We called for help,
not tragedy.
Care, not force!
Care, not force!
We call for
protesters
help.
Gathered along a main thoroughfare on a drizzly afternoon
force.
In Fairbanks, many of them holding portraits of William Rexford, a 24-year-old Alaska Native man. The Rexford family held his funeral the day before, the same day state prosecutors announced they would not press charges against the troopers who shot him. Speaking to protesters, Rexford's sister, Elizabeth Rexford, said she will always remember her brother as a smart, industrious, and genuinely kind person, and one who very much had his future on his mind.
He would call me to talk about investments, stocks, retirements, things most people his age weren't even thinking about yet.
Native Movement, an indigenous activist group, organized the protest. It was attended by families of other people shot by law enforcement officers, as well as community members who were concerned about the safety of people experiencing mental health problems. According to 911 records obtained by KUAC, 3 Alaska State Troopers responded to a pair of calls on New Year's Day, one from Rexford's father and one from a brother. Reporting that William Rexford was experiencing a mental health crisis at his home shortly after he'd been discharged from the hospital. Body camera footage reviewed by KUAC showed the troopers speaking to William Rexford for about 6 minutes in the family's living room about returning to the hospital. Rexford can then be seen fleeing into the kitchen, where troopers reported he grabbed 2 knives. Trooper John Fowle fell to the ground and, according to an incident report, sustained a knife wound on his hand. He and Trooper Wyatt Miller shot at Rexford, killing him. they also shot one of his brothers, Adam Rexford, who troopers said had been trying to pull William Rexford away from Fowl. According to family members, Rexford is now at a hospital in Seattle, recovering from a gunshot wound to the head. All of this unfolded in front of their mother, Donna Rexford. She also spoke at the protest.
They came and killed my son and shot my other one in the brain. I spent over 10 weeks in Seattle and because he has blind in one eye, he has trouble walking.
Both Miller and Fowl had been on the force for less than 6 months at the time of the shooting. A release from the State Department of Law said the shooting was legally justified. In an interview, trooper spokesperson Austin McDaniel said the troopers will try to learn from the incident.
We do what's called a force review board. The folks from training, from tactics, from command will go through and essentially review the incident to determine if any of our tactics, training, or equipment should be changed so that we have to hopefully use less lethal force in situations like this.
At the protest, members of the Rexford family said they didn't want to see another family go through such a tragedy. But some at the protest already had.
It's not just Anchorage. It happens all over Alaska. It happens down south as well.
Jean Eyre is the mother of Cody Eyre, a 20-year-old man who was fatally shot by police while he was experiencing a mental health crisis on Christmas Eve in 2017.
Crisis intervention was about 2 minutes away. There was nowhere for Cody to go. He was completely surrounded by snow and woods and fences. He didn't shoot his gun even once, but the police shot at him 42 times. They hit him 12 times.
Eyre says she hopes these tragedies will inspire meaningful, lasting change, and that in the future, people facing mental health crises will be met with care rather than deadly force. But for now, Rexford's family is calling for more transparency. In the months after his death, Native Movement members say the Rexford family struggled to get basic information about the shooting that changed their lives forever. Things like state records, body camera footage, and incident reports. And several relatives said it was distressing when news outlets got the footage the same day they did and published it before they could review it. They're advocating for House Bill 377, which would ensure priority access to state records, including body camera footage, for immediate family and legal representatives of police shooting victims. With reporting help from Patrick Gilchrist, I'm Shelby Herbert in Fairbanks.
Anchorage police and a man running from a stolen vehicle early this morning exchanged gunfire that injured both the man and a police dog. As Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, the incident marks the city's third police shooting in as many weeks.
Police say someone called dispatchers around 3:25 a.m. Wednesday after seeing their stolen vehicle at a Circle K gas station on the city's west side. Here's Anchorage Police Chief Sean Case speaking at a press conference.
When the vehicle left the gas station, the complainant and owner of the vehicle maintained on the line with dispatch and followed a safe distance to provide updates so that officers could help recover a vehicle for it.
The vehicle ended up about a mile away, where Case says officers attempted to block it. He says two people got out, including one who was arrested immediately. The second person ran, and several officers and a canine unit chased after him.
The suspect at one point in time turns and fires somewhere between one and three rounds in the direction of the officers, and four officers return fire. During the exchange, our canine Kiska was struck by one of the rounds.
Case's officers shot the man multiple times. Fire department personnel took him to a local hospital, and the man was still alive as of mid-morning.
Canine Kiska was taken to Pet Emergency, where he had one of his toes removed as a result of the gunshot.
It wasn't immediately clear whether Kiska was struck by shots fired by the man or officers. Case says Kiska's wounds were not life-threatening. He wasn't aware of any charges filed against either person officers encountered in the stolen vehicle. The incident marks the third Anchorage police shooting in 3 weeks. Case says the spike in police shootings in such a short time period warrants questions about de-escalation and police training.
What I can tell you is that the Anchorage Police Department has the same commitment to excellence in responding to calls that are high risk, regardless of what the facts and circumstances are.
An officer shot at 43-year-old Michael Bonin on March 28th after Bonin allegedly shot at police from a South Anchorage home, according to the police department. He died shortly after. Police believe Bonin started a fire at the home, and they were investigating whether Bonin was fatally shot by the officer or died in the fire. On April 7th, a police dog injured a man who exchanged gunfire with an officer near the Russian Jack neighborhood, police say. The man had allegedly choked a woman in the presence of her infant before fleeing the home when officers arrived. Case says the department will hold a press conference next week with more details about Wednesday morning's shooting. In 2025, Anchorage police officers shot five people, three of whom died. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Sitka bookstore celebrates a milestone anniversary.
The most encouraging thing is that it seems like people love books again, and thank goodness for that.
That's ahead. Stay with us. Identity Alaska is closing its Anchorage clinic this month due to multiple logistical and financial challenges. The clinic is the only dedicated queer-focused healthcare center in the state. It serves around 1,500 Alaskans for primary and mental health care. Most of the clinic's patients are in Anchorage, but healthcare providers also saw patients across the state through travel and telehealth. Tom Pittman is executive director of Identity Alaska. He says losing this piece of community infrastructure for Alaska is devastating.
It's jarring and it's quick, and there's a lot of grief that the community is going to feel. This is such a critical resource, and not having it will be painful.
Pittman says the clinic faced a series of challenges at the same time. That includes problems with their lease, delayed Medicaid payments, and the ongoing pressure of running the clinic under a presidential administration hostile to queer and trans people. Pittman says most primary care providers can offer similar health care, including hormone replacement therapy and medications to prevent HIV transmission. But many clinics don't provide those services, sometimes due to providers' lack of education or stigma. Studies show many queer people experience barriers to care and discrimination in the healthcare system, and some avoid getting care because of that. Pittman says Identity staff will help current patients find other options.
There are a few organizations, a few providers in the area that have responded, I think, as a testament to their values and who they are, in immediately getting to work to try and make sure that there is a smooth transition and that there's as little disruption as possible.
Pittman says Identity Alaska was created through community and that those in the community will continue to take care of each other. The Juneau School Board unanimously approved a long-awaited contract between the school district and its teachers' union last night. That marks the end of more than a year of negotiations, which escalated to the union authorizing a strike in March. School Board Vice President Elizabeth Sidden says she's glad to reach an agreement after a difficult negotiation process.
There are neighbors, there are friends, and in some cases, there are our own kids' support systems. So it was hard. I just wanted to say it was hard for all of us, and I'm glad that we're here now.
The two-year contract begins retroactively from last July and lasts until next June. It provides staff with a 3% wage increase this year that is split among teachers based on experience and an increase of more than 6% for the next school year. The district's monthly contribution for health insurance will also increase by $50 this year and $40 next year. The district estimates that maintaining services will leave a $4 million deficit for the year after the contract ends. Board member Steve Whitney says he wishes the district could pay newer teachers more, and he's concerned they will be the first to go if layoffs occur in the future.
Everybody involved in this deserves more money and more benefits than we can possibly give them. And we don't have the ability to generate revenue, so we can't give people what they deserve. And that's a huge regret. But it's out of our hands.
Board President Brittany Choney Haywood says the ability to increase school funding to address the looming deficit lies with the Alaska legislature.
We really need to be united in advocating to the people who have control to fix that, which is no one at this table, but is up on that hill.
The contract between the school district and the teachers' union ends in July of 2027. Animals are a big part of many people's lives, but when people who are homeless have pets, sometimes they have to choose between their animals and shelter. That's not the case in Anchorage, where two city-run shelters now welcome animals. As Alaska Public Media's Hannah Floor reports, officials say the policy helps eliminate barriers to housing, but it also helps people maintain dignity and stability when things get tough.
At the newest homeless shelter in Anchorage, there's a room just for animals.
Where's your friend? Get the kitty.
William Gonzalez Jr. lives at Linda's place with his pup, Baby.
Her mother was a wiener dog, and the father was a Pomeranian, from what I understand. Weird mix, but I love the outcome.
Gonzalez Jr. became homeless nearly a year ago after a divorce and a domestic violence protective order. He says he doesn't know what he'd do if Baby wasn't allowed in the shelter. She really helps him get through anxiety attacks and depression.
All I have to do is just hold her, and she knows something's wrong, and then she'll start licking my face and like, okay, I'm here, and then she'll sit in my lap and I'll pet her, and everything's good from there.
Homeless advocates say when shelters don't allow animals, people will often choose to stay outdoors rather than give up their pet. And they say a shift toward allowing animals in homeless shelters does more than just get people inside. For people like Gonzalez Jr., an animal's love can be the most dependable thing in their life. Thea Agnew-Benben is with the mayor's office.
I think there's a lot of reasons why, you know, when your life maybe has kind of fallen apart, that having an animal is one of the things that can help bring you back towards connection and stability.
When Mayor Suzanne LaFrance took office in 2024, the city had just started rethinking its policy on pets in homeless shelters. That was after a survey from the Anchorage Coalition to End Homelessness found that pet and animal ownership was a significant barrier to shelter. Agnew-Benben says it was an easy decision for the LaFrance administration to allow animals in shelters whenever possible. Now, they're welcome in two of Anchorage's three city-run shelters. There were only six people with pets at Linda's place in early April. But Agnew-Benben says for homeless people with animals, it makes a meaningful difference. And she says it's part of a bigger philosophy towards homelessness.
To treat people with respect and dignity and to accept that they have full lives just like everyone else, and that we're trying to help them move to stability with their full lives intact.
And like with Gonzalez Jr., animals help some people regulate their emotions. Chris McClellan manages Linda's place. But before that, he worked at other shelters that didn't allow animals. He says he can see a distinct difference in the way people behave.
We didn't allow pets in the building for whatever reason. And so they didn't have the luxury of being able to go and self-cope. And you see a lot more lashing out that way, a lot more anger.
And he says there's no real inconvenience to having pets and other animals at the shelter. As a manager, he doesn't have any complaints. He says he loves the policy.
Sometimes that pet is the only thing they have, the only thing that understands what they're going through at the time. And so it really does. They really do serve a purpose.
Linda's Place provides pet food and has a partnership with an organization that comes through to give veterinary care to the animals. Gonzalez Jr. says the care Baby gets here is important. Her well-being is his top priority.
Before I do anything for me, she gets everything done for her. And that's food, that's water, that's shots. If she gets basic checkups and stuff like that, she gets it first. And then I worry about me.
He says he tries to keep Baby as comfortable as possible, but she still isn't completely used to sleeping in a crate away from him. Sometimes he goes in to cuddle her, to calm her down. Returning the favor for all the times, she's done the same for him.
She's more dependable than money. She's more dependable than friendships. I mean, she loves me for just me, and that's it.
He says he can't wait until he gets housing, and Baby can have the run of the place like she used to. In Anchorage, I'm Hannah Floor.
Applications are now open for a summer food assistance program for kids in rural Alaska. The Meals to You program is an ongoing partnership between school districts and the Food Bank of Alaska to ensure kids in rural communities have access to food when school is not in session. Jillian McPherson is the child nutrition manager at the Food Bank of Alaska. She says the meals are shipped directly to qualifying families, with more than 34 school districts participating.
Perfect program for Alaska because this is a way for children to get summer food service programs in rural Alaska. And so this is able to reach those children in the communities that have 12 people, no buildings, people are away at fish camp. So this bridges that gap.
Last summer, the program delivered more than 1 million meals to nearly 9,000 kids. Families who qualify can receive meal boxes with 5 breakfasts and 5 lunches per child shipped to their house or local post office throughout the summer. There are some requirements, and interested families should visit the Food Bank of Alaska website. The last day to apply for the summer program is April 30th. Sitka's local bookstore celebrated its 50th birthday on Saturday. Throughout the afternoon, locals wandered into the downtown shop to buy a book, eat a cupcake, and reminisce on 5 decades of the community hub. KCAW's Hope McKinney attended the celebration and has this story.
Let's all get all the gang together. That'll be fun.
50 years ago, to buy a book, Sitkins had to call up the bookstore in Juneau and have it mailed to the island. So in 1976, 3 families came together to start Old Harbor Books, a place where Sitkins could gather and find nearly every genre, from philosophy and classics to bestsellers and Alaskan authors.
The vision was to have books, you know, and like to make sure that Sitka was had an opportunity to be a literary community. Like, you know, Sitka deserved to be a literary community.
Board member Roger Schmidt grew up in the bookstore. His parents helped open the place when he was 7 and his sister Laura was 9. They spent weekends selling seashells out front and screen printing tote bags with the bookstore logos still used today. And they spent their downtime reading every book they could get their hands on.
I know you guys all had this passion. My dad had the passion. Everybody had this passion, which was people need to read books and they need to have access to lots of books and they need to have access to lots of different ideas. So not just, you know, we're going to have, you know, the best sellers or whatever, but that whatever subject, books are so critical to learn. I mean, it's before the internet too, which sounds obvious but silly at the same time. But, you know, living on an island, books were our pathway to knowledge.
Schmidt says a large part of the mission of Old Harbor Books was to give back to the community. Instead of taking a paycheck, the owners made the decision to use the profits to support local organizations by doing things like subsidizing or making free their rental space upstairs.
The vision for the business was never to make money. It was to pay employees well. And then it was to be able to support the community in every way it could. And it's done that for 50 years in all kinds of ways.
Bookstore manager Ashia Lane says the bookstore continues to work with the public library and schools, sells tickets for local events, and for years even had the book boat, which traveled to surrounding communities like Tenneke Springs and Goon and Cake to deliver titles to folks who didn't have access to a local bookstore.
We're trying to continue community service via the bookstore. We'll deliver books to the jail if you're find yourself, unfortunately, over in the Sitka local lockup for the weekend. We can deliver books to you. We're really trying to not just be for private consumers.
Despite community involvement, it wasn't always easy keeping the doors open. Just like bookstores across the country that found it hard to compete with the dawn of online shops and ebooks, so did Old Harbor Books. So they pivoted and expanded their local inventory to include games and puzzles, book-themed items, cozy candles and blankets, and even art supplies. And according to Schmidt, they began to rely more on rental income to keep the bookstore going.
I think the most encouraging thing is that it seems like people love books again, and thank goodness for that. We were so worried when we were looking at, you know, that around 2000 when it just seemed like people were turning away from books and they were not passionate readers, and it just feels so hopeful that people want to read books and they want to read books in their hand, and it's just really great.
The bustling anniversary party around us is a testament to that fact. For Sherry Foster, a retired third grade teacher, the bookstore is part of the reason she chose to live in Sitka.
We moved here in 76, and when we saw that there was a bookstore, we said, well, that's it then. We're going to stay. We weren't sure where we were going to live.
That's pretty neat.
It was a given. If there's a bookstore, it's an okay place to live.
And Foster isn't the only one who thinks Old Harbor Books is a local treasure. Rhiannon Gavon's first job was working at the bookstore. She describes herself as anti-Amazon and made a vow to herself years ago that if she's going to buy a book, it's going to be from Old Harbor.
And I think that there's like a
a weirdly large number of people for such a small town who feel the same way.
Many rural communities throughout Alaska don't have a local bookstore. For a town of about 8,400, Sitka is pretty unique. Karen Hagee first supported Old Harbor Books 30 years before she actually moved to the community after visiting a friend.
I mean, the fact that it's endured for 50 years is a testament to just the people who run the bookstore and hopefully to the community too, that it'll be here for another 50 years.
If these partygoers have anything to say about it, it probably will be. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Hope McKenney.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Shelby Herbert in Fairbanks, Wesley Early, Rachel Cassandra, Hannah Floor, and Michaela Finnerty in Anchorage, Jamie Deep in Juneau, and Hope McKenney in Sitka. Our audio engineer is Crystal Hyde, Kirsten Dobroth is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.